Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Let's Talk Org. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're remembering Thomas Torlinghazi. Who was Thomas Torlinghazi? I called him a friend, a fellow activist, a brother, a person who loved Fort Worth and died trying to make it a better place. Thomas died on Wednesday, September 7th. But the Tuesday prior to his death, he was a speaker at both the Commissioner's Court and at City Hall, fighting for what he believed in. He was also a Let's Talk Fort Worth street fan. No issues going on in that community. Brave, articulate, intelligent, a chameleon, and he loved this city and fought for the people. I called him mysterious because he never announced where he was going to be next. Even though he was a street team member, most times I learned where Thomas was going to be when everybody else did. I log on to Facebook and I would see Thomas going live. Basically, I see him at City Hall, walking the halls of City Hall, giving us a lowdown on what all the departments did, who was in the departments, and what they were up to. We see him at the Commissioner's Court building talking about what was going on there. We saw him at TRWD the police department, and Tarrant Appraisal District, which him, Manuel Mata, and Chandler Crouch took on, and we all know the rest. I call Thomas brave because he did what he did, even though his knees may have been knocking. He still did it because he believed that if he did what he did, eventually change would come. So tonight our music is very appropriate because I really believe that the work that Thomas did will not be in vain, and I think eventually change will come. So I also found him to be articulate. Thomas was well-spoken. He was always very polished. He was a speaker of speaker, a graduate of Toastmasters. So when he spoke, you always knew he came prepared. He was highly intelligent, well-versed on a bunch of topics. And he was a chameleon because Thomas was able to interact with all types of groups, races, classes. He just had it like that. So will he be missed? Absolutely. I don't know if anybody watched last Tuesday city council meeting, but there was no mention of Thomas Torlinkazi. We saw mariachi bands. We saw dancers. We saw dogs, but we heard no mention of Thomas Torlinkazi. So tonight, we thought it was only fitting that we let the city of Fort Worth know we didn't forget Thomas. And we very much know that his memory will forever be alive in this city. And he's a legacy that we all must pick up the torch and follow. Because what he did because he believed if he continued to fight, the change would come. So tonight, y'all, my heart is heavy. I'll be honest with you, this has not been an easy week. When I got the news on Thursday, Manuel Mata inboxed me on Facebook and said, Thomas is gone. And that completely went over my head. I thought, gone where? My worst thought was maybe they put him in jail. But I didn't ever think Thomas was gone forever. And I don't think he really will, because I think he's going to be in our hearts for a very long time. And the memory I have with Thomas is one day we spent 4 hours sitting behind the new Reba Carey Library on Lancaster. And if people who know me, I'm a person who's very talkative, but Thomas had me beat. And Thomas really spent the majority of the conversation basically catching me up on all the things I didn't know about Fort Worth. And I appreciated the lesson. That would be our first meeting. Our second meeting would be when he met me at Tarrant Appraisal District, and he was my camera person as I went in and challenged my taxes. That said, we were an awesome team. And I got my taxes reduced by $37,000. So my memories of Thomas are strong. And after we left that meeting, I and Bob Willoughby sat in the car and laughed for almost an hour. So my memories are fun ones of the things I learned from Thomas. We inboxed or called or texted each other almost daily. About something going on in the city, some update on something, some news story breaking, something that he knew was about to happen. So my memories are good ones. And he will be missed. I feel so bad for the family because it was so unexpected. I feel bad for his girlfriend of 4 years. I feel bad for Manuel Mata, who was best friends with him. And I feel bad for all the rest of us who were friends with him too and felt his passion, his drive. You couldn't help but be motivated by what he did. So tonight we just wasn't going to let this city pretend that Thomas Torlinkazi was an important member of this community. And we, that knew him and loved him, just felt it was only fitting. I couldn't do the show last week. I was just at a loss of words. I couldn't even formulate my show where to begin. But a week later, after I saw what Downtown did this week, shameful. It's shameful. I saw immaturity in the leadership of all the bells and all the whistles that took place down there, but no mention of Thomas, and even mentioning the death of someone else, but not mentioning the death of Trillin Takazi. So we didn't love him. We didn't knew him. We're not going to do that. And so I see Becky's on the line. I see Mr. James is on the line, and I'm going to let them tell us what they think as well. Good evening, y'all. Good evening, Becky. Good evening,
hello.
Mr. James.
How's everybody?
Fine. Hey, Mr. James.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Fine. How are you doing?
It's been a rough few weeks.
Wow. Yeah. Becky, how did you get to know Taylor?
I actually met him through going into different places and trying to get heard for what had happened to my family 6 years ago. And I found that you and him were a really amazing team. And I started listening to you and met Thomas, and then reaching out to Thomas to tell him about what happened to me and explaining to him basically how I had PTSD and how I was trying to work on reconquering that fear that was placed in me, because I had been threatened to stop writing about politics if I wanted my children back by Tarrant County CPS. And so I had gone to college to write about politics. That was my whole dream, to write history books. And so to be assaulted by alt-right, violent people who sided with violence against me and threatened me and my family violently, it was just so damaging and so traumatizing that I would watch him confront people and have no fear. And I'm trying not to cry because I had a lot of fear. So I would watch him go into places that I was too scared to go. And I went to counseling for years and would walk in and dare myself to go in and talk to the sergeant. And the sergeant would tell me that they threw out the evidence, that my witnesses didn't know good from bad. I would get bullied and bullied and then leave shaking and throwing up on the ride home and crying because I couldn't get anyone to care that my children had been physically hurt. I couldn't get anyone to protect me. But Thomas would let me write, and he would write back and give me advice on my writing. He would give me feedback. He was amazing at telling me that he got me to actually go into the city council. And I thought I signed up just to sit there because I wrote him and said, I'm really having PTSD. I would like to baby step it and just go in and sit. And then that night they called me. So I had no speech prepared. I had no idea I was going to be called. So when they called me, I was just facing a fear. And after it was over, he wrote me and let me know, like, how hard it must have been to be told to go back to the same people that I've been going to for years that wouldn't help me, but that he was proud of me for getting up there, showing them that I'm not too scared to speak out. And he was just a really great activist, and that's the only side I saw of him. And so it was shocking to see any disrespect of him, because I only knew this really kind person who was trying to help me not be scared. And then seeing in the newspaper that he was described as a gadfly, like an annoying person, was shocking to me, because it's just, it's just these little jabs that people use vocabulary. And I found it shocking to be described in an obituary as an annoying person, when he maybe annoyed people that were corrupt.
Wow.
He maybe annoyed people who were corrupt, and he would be confrontational, but he always had evidence that there was corruption. And so if he annoyed someone for corruption, it was shocking, because you would think, okay, the police are there to stop corruption, so wouldn't a somebody finding corruption be praised? Wouldn't they like someone? Wouldn't they want that instead of being so angry at that? Like, it just shocked me. It was like a life lesson. I mean, this is somebody who was letting me know about Wayborn, telling me about John Eastman. I didn't even know the connection. I mean, somebody who was letting me know, hey, the Tarrant County Sheriff's Department that won't investigate the what happened to you, they're connected to people that are dangerous and inciting insurrections on our Capitol. Like, it's a big deal. And just kind of filling me in on some things I just didn't know. So I felt grateful. I felt like he was such a great, just somebody I could write at any time about some kind of fear I had. Or then it became more of a friendship of sharing news articles and also like that too, because that is actually my, what I went to college to do is to write history. So journalism is connected to history, and free press is history. We wouldn't even have history to talk about if we didn't have journalists' information about what's going on, right? So it was just a really great friendship. I wanted to share the last conversation we had, which was through, we were writing, and we were actually debating on how we could petition to get Sheriff Wayborn out of office. So the last thing we were talking about was setting up a petition, how we could do it, how many people we'd need, researching how to petition to get a sheriff removed. Because we felt like, I think a lot of people feel like it's not safe if we have a sheriff who is so extremist, with extremist groups. And the fact that Wayborn is connected to John Eastman and Sheriff Richard Mack. And I think Edward Brown covered this really well in the Fort Worth Weekly. That's a lot of where this came to revelation. So, you know, just trying to come together as a city and saying, like, hey, a lot of people here don't vote the way you do. And you can't see all of us as radical leftists. There's a lot of Republicans that don't support the insurrection. There's a lot of Democrats, progressives, and independents. We're all together. We don't support it. So if you think all of us who don't support insurrection are all radicals, then you aren't going to keep us safe. And I think that Thomas was just an amazing advocate, and I definitely will pick up the torch. And definitely he helped me go face one of the biggest fears. And I'm so grateful I did it before he passed over. And I do believe that we'll be reunited all the, you know, in this next life to come. And just in this one, we've got to keep our light shining. So I'm grateful for you having me on tonight so I could pay my respects.
Great. Mr. James, how did you meet Thomas?
I met Thomas during, of course, the Atatiana murder.
Really?
He introduced himself to me. But before I go off into that, I just want to say I'm not going to say a perfect 10, but just think of 10 things that are going on in the city of Fort Worth that Thomas touched on. And I'm going to just briefly give you the headline of that thing.
Wow.
The Sheriff's Department, the Police Department, the City Council, Trinity Water Department, the Tarrant County Appraisal Department, the Fort Worth Panther Island debacle, the Tarrant County Commissioner's Court, Atatiana Jefferson, and we just picked up Manuel Mata in the police audit. So those are 10 major things of importance in the city that have been, I'm not going to say overlooked, because he put it right front. He put it out right in front. So there's a problem. If these 10 things in this city go unchallenged,
I never thought about it like that. You know, as a matter of fact, never thought about he was on 10 different things.
Wow. That's amazing
Each of these things had a major problem that required the city council and the commissioner's court to act on. So I was crying when your monologue song came on. I'm like, pull it together, James. This is not the time.
But me too.
Just as the Atossiana Jefferson case, all these other nine things are going about it the same way as being ignored or overlooked, and that's not that's not copacetic. So I'm hoping that although Thomas is gone, he planted some seeds. Hoping he planted some seeds. You know, we may never be able to duplicate his style because he was bold and brazen, and that takes time to acquire. But I'm in awe of his functioning in the city.
You know what's amazing is that the person you just described is how those of us that knew Thomas pretty well saw him. But it's amazing in his death how the city has tried to minimize his presence, if that makes sense.
Right.
As though it wasn't as significant as it was.
That's the same technique they're trying to use on the Tatiana Jefferson thing. And so that's why for 3 years, I'm going to say her name. And just like all the resistance that he got from the sheriff's department, the police department, and even some of the city buildings that we are allowed to go in, the pushback he got is heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
That even though you're legally allowed to go in some places in Fort Worth, they can kick you out. Even though you're legally allowed to be there, they can kick you. That's heartbreaking.
But it almost feels as though there's a hush over the city since Thomas has died, as though people are afraid. Now, the question is, why is there a fear since Thomas has passed away? It's almost as though it's like a, you know, people are talking in the shadows and, you know, like afraid to speak, like almost in a whisper when they're talking about Thomas. So why do we feel that in the city after Thomas's death?
You know, I'm not going to say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I can say there were two shooters in the grassy knoll. You know.
Okay. Yeah, people might be afraid. Yeah.
And for even for his council member, I don't know who his council member is. Even if his council member didn't acknowledge he died or speak on all that he did bring to city council that was positive.
Yeah.
That's problematic to me.
You know, I had a problem. Finish that.
I was just saying, if you know me, his name will be mentioned next Tuesday in city council. His name will be mentioned at the Kern County Commissioner's Court. So go ahead.
I had a problem that I think I heard Councilman Nettles allude to the fact that some people abuse their ability to speak on multiple topics. And y'all, for clarity, I called the city secretary's office about the new rule that they almost voted on Tuesday night, but they passed on the rule to vote on it, and they said they would pick it up the next time they met. Well, the rule was, and pay attention to how this rule went. The rule was, or the rule will be, if it passes, that if you are someone who came to council or comes to council like Thomas and spoke on multiple topics, whether those are, consent agenda or non-consent agenda items, that you will only have 1 3-minute, even if you're talking on 15 topics. So if you're, let's just say you're talking on consent agenda items and you have 15 of those you want to speak on, you can only have 3 minutes to speak on those.
Why are they afraid to let people speak?
Because Thomas was effective. That's what it says to me.
That's what I mean. It's like you just let people speak. I don't understand It's freedom of speech.
I think I heard two people, if you go back and listen to Tuesday night's council meeting, you will hear Bishop Kirkland and a person by the name of Lon, and I don't remember what Lon's last name was, but they both spoke one behind the other, Kirkland and then Lon, and they both told the council, I plead with you to reconsider on this vote. Reconsider what you're about to do on this vote and realize that the people put you there. And not, mm-hmm. you know, you're not here to serve you. You are here to serve us. And that was the basically the gist of what both of them said. And I think both of them mentioned Thomas. Kirkland could not remember his name, but he said it's the guy who comes down here every week. And Lon actually called Thomas his name. So they both pled with the council not to, to complete that vote, and they postponed it for the next week. But it just shows you that they don't get us. I mean, they don't get we the people, that T-shirt that Thomas always wore. They don't get that part, that we the people are who they're here or in place to try and please and not the other way around. So,
well, a healthy democracy, right, a healthy democracy would need everybody to be able to be heard equal at the table. So if you take away the equal right for the public to be able to speak about whatever topic, then you're not making it a democracy. You're making it to where you have more authority and it's not weighed right. So I don't understand how anybody could do that.
Wow. But see, this city has almost a million people, or no, I'm sorry, it's over a million now. And if all 1 million of them came down to speak, we know where we would be. So Thomas, just one person, was speaking for a whole lot of people. But even that, they tried to take away. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Right.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, as though their schedule will not allow people to come up and voice their opinion on more than one item, because obviously it's got to be a time issue, or they don't want us to be informed, or both. It's just what it is.
Well,
I don't
understand the time issue, because what they're paid for with tax money is to listen to us. So what else are they doing?
Well,
their whole job is to be our leader. So why wouldn't they want to listen to their own people?
If you stop and look at the content of what Thomas uncovered and proved and demonstrated, that speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
The things he uncovered in each one of these 10 areas is mind-boggling that no action is taken on those things.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mr. Dance.
The 97-page police report, Thomas was going to have a field day with that. He didn't get a chance, but he was going to have a field day with that 97-page report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very amazing that when you see it for what it was, they are absolutely trying to, and I say to anybody who follows this narrative, I suggest you reject it. If you try to size a man up by what you say he had, you know, in terms of personal, you know, things or personal properties or things like that's not the size of a man. The character is what defines a man. So any picture that's tried to be painted in this last week that portrays him other than a tall man in character, you're missing who Thomas really was. I mean,
well,
really.
I think I'm sorry, but I think that goes along with kind of the shift in Christianity into the Prosper Gospels, which I find very degrading of the majority of people. If you get preached to that if you are loved by God that you will have more things, then that's kind of a damaging ideology, I think. So I think that in this area there's just so much of that going around that's kind of warped people from, you know, and I'm speaking just from a Christian perspective. I'm for all different, you know, whatever your religion is, but I think that is very much so, since right now we're up against Christian nationalists who are with Prosper
evangelicals that were kind of up against a whole group of people that have dismissed the real message of what they say they're for, which is to love everyone as equal. So demean a human by not having material items. But that's how people are treated, and we need to try to fight that for sure. So I do agree with you that that's...
I think that's unfortunate, because anybody that knew Thomas knew that he could mix and mingle with different races, different classes, different groups, and he was a chameleon. I mean, basically, he did it seamlessly. He absolutely had the ability to talk to anybody. He could sit down next to anybody and strike up a conversation. You know, he just had that boy next door kind of vibe to him. And when you saw Thomas, you didn't see money, because he never tried to present himself that way. You didn't see someone who tried to present themselves in a certain class. You just saw a human being who was trying to connect with another human being. That's how I saw Thomas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing, too.
Would you agree with that, Ms.?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was asking Mr. James, did he agree?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was standing downtown in front of the Vandegrift Court building during that time that they were trying to move the trial or recuse the judge. And I was standing there alone for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I looked up, and here comes Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm holding the fort." And he says, "Well, have you eaten?" And, of course, I've been there all morning, and the answer was no. He walked to get me something to eat.
Wow.
And when he came back, he brought me some, I think it was chicken tenders and onion rings, and it came from Hooters.
Wow.
I've never been to Hooters, but I can just imagine what you just had to go through. You know what you had to go through to bring me something to eat.
Wow.
And during that encounter, he asked me, did I know Manuel, because Manuel was standing with me the day before. He says, "Well, I'd like to meet him. Could you connect us?"
Wow.
And I said, "Sure." And I connected them, and they were like Siamese twins. I said, "Well, golly." So you never know who God puts you in contact with to make a contact with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll never look at who did that another way.
It's probably pretty funny in heaven if Thomas thinks that you think about him every time you see Hooters.
Yeah, I'm just saying, what people go through to help, you know, to help somebody else, you know.
Yeah,
but
that's nice. I have noticed some pushback.
Mm-hmm.
I was sending out different to a bunch of different people, and some people would decline on helping me raise money because they had said it was a little too controversial for them. So I do understand the hush you were talking about.
Mm.
I don't understand what that controversial thing is. I can't really get to the bottom of it, but I think that people are scared. And I think that when they see anybody who's getting the police are after them, or, you know, I'm sure they get a feeling of they don't want to talk. They don't want to be around it. They want to protect their family. They don't want to be involved. You know, 60% of people are, they poll that 60% of people are too scared to speak out if in a group. So if you're speaking out, you're already 40% of a group polled. So right there, most people, that hush you feel is most people maybe just being too scared to even be in the controversy. And then if you get the 40% who aren't too scared, you're going to find people that are going to be like, "I don't really want to be involved in any police, anything," you know, like they don't want anything, you know, it's really hard sometimes to find people. I noticed that because the police wrongfully took me in and asked me questions that were insane, like asking me if I was going to bring down the FBI or planning on doing horrible things, even though I've never said anything horrible, never thought anything horrible. The fact that they can project on you something bad, right there, when you try to go ask for help, the second you tell someone about what happened, their face changes, their body language changes, they see you as being controversial and they don't want their family to be involved. They don't want to get in trouble. Like, it's a very police state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we jail 25% of the world's prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, you know, you're in a position where you are in a police state. So there is this hush of any time you bring up corruption and police, and a lot of times people will assume you don't like police. I have family that are good cops. I have family, you know, I have friends that are great detectives. I don't not like police because I know there are corrupt ones. So when you try to call out, hey, this cop is corrupt, they'll try to saddle you with being some extremist. But really, you're just calling out a bad cop. You don't see that when, if you say, hey, this doctor is bad, you don't suddenly, nobody thinks you suddenly hate all doctors. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You can say, hey, this doctor is a corrupt, sadistic person. This person hurt me. And that doesn't mean you hate all doctors. But for some reason in our culture, if you say, hey, I found this one cop, preachers, like the Baptist thing that just happened, you call out one bad person, and sometimes the whole institution will cover that one bad person and make the person who's accusing the bad. So it's an institutional thing that's weird. We need to get it to where it's easier for whistleblowers to tell about bad people that are police, because statistically there might be a few bad people. I mean, there's a lot of police. You might accidentally hire a bad one, and you should be able to tell without being demonized. So
right.
It's just a really weird phenomenon I've seen, because if you were going to say, like, hey, there's this evil nurse and she killed a bunch of people, which happens, you know, nurses are amazing. I don't think all nurses are evil. I'm allowed to say this nurse was an evil nurse and nobody thinks I hate the profession of nurses. But for some reason, if you – yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm finished.
I'm just saying that it's really hard. I think a lot of the hush about Thomas is that he did the heavy lift, called out the corrupt cops.
Yeah.
Then people would see him as being like, he hates all cops. And then they'd be scared that if they got involved with him, they'd look like they hate all cops. And Thomas didn't hate cops. He didn't like corrupt cops. And you'd think that a good cop would be like, oh, thank God we found someone, you know, who can bring us the information on the bad cop, because I would think, just with my principles that I was raised in, Sunday school, you would think you would tell on bad and be, you know, that's what we were raised to do. We were raised to be good citizens. If we see something bad, we turn it in. You know, it's what school teachers taught us, Sunday school teachers. That's the ideology of being a good citizen. And so
But I think the message that City Hall sent with this vote, and it's just ironic that the vote would come or try to pass. Okay, let me get this date right. Thomas passed on Wednesday. The vote was tried. Okay. Why am I confused here? Thomas died on Wednesday, and then this past Tuesday, I'm sorry, now I'm getting right. This past Tuesday, they tried to pass that thing. It's almost as though they're saying, like, to everybody else, we don't want you doing this, and so we're going to actually put something in place to discourage your voice down here. I mean, that's almost what it seems like. I mean, I've only spoken down at City Council once. I've called in several times. But, Mr. James, you have actually gone down there and spoken weeks and weeks and weeks at a time. Do you feel like that vote is trying to discourage people like you from going?
Well, when Elizabeth, I was down the last 2 years, the last time that Thomas went, that's the last time I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
When someone tells you that what you're saying is nauseating, that's a low blow. Because when Councilwoman Beck told Thomas that he was nauseated, I had the question, well, am I nauseating because I've been down here for 3 years? You know, or, you know, am I? You know, it makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And if I am nauseating, get you some Pepto-Bismol because I'm still coming.
Yep.
What makes it their city council and not our city council? What makes we put them in those seats? They forget that part. We put them in those seats, and then they get in the seats, and then they change everything about council and make us the problem? Is that what it seems like to you?
Well, I'm hoping Bob can finally win his getting the public speaking back into the regular council meeting. And being at the front of the meeting. For the simple fact, those of us that do go on the Tuesday that they now have,
mm-hmm.
we may as well go to Hooters and talk. You know what I'm saying? Because the city doesn't hear us. It's not on Facebook. You know, we can't get any interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that was done on purpose.
I think they did move it back to the top. I think that was one of the things that's going to be on there. It's going to move it back to the top, but they're going to limit your number of times that you can speak. So you're going to have to get it all out at the top in the first 3 minutes.
You mentioned, Carrie, how Thomas would come up for many different people. So if he's right. going up for people who have been so brutalized by police that they're scared, and, I mean, I would write him and say, I have PTSD, but I really want to go into the court and reclaim. I don't want to be afraid. I want to show that I'm not afraid, you know, because I didn't do anything wrong. I don't deserve to feel like this. I'm done. And so if he's going in there to stand up for people, he's got a lot of different things to talk about. And they don't understand that. They don't understand that somebody's going up there talking for a lot of different people. But go ahead. I'm really grateful that you mentioned that nauseating comment because that's exactly what I thought when she asked you that question. I thought, oh, my God, I need to let him know that I was so grateful he said that. Because mm-hmm. when he said, do you think I'm nauseating? That's how I feel. Why do you think it's so hard for me to go up there? I've been going to the police, and they, like, roll their eyes at me and tell me my witnesses don't know good from bad. You know, when you're in a court that your witnesses don't know good from bad, you know, I mean, I recorded a sergeant saying this to me. And so when you hear that, you're like, how do we even have juries? If we can't know right from wrong, like, what are you telling me? Like, I'm stripped from all my constitutional rights. So when you mentioned the nauseating thing, it was so powerful because it's just the way I felt. So I just wanted to thank you for saying that.
Wow.
No, it's true. But what I'm fearful is all these doors, and let's use a door as a context, doors or windows, mm-hmm. all these doors or windows that Thomas opened,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he opened them and he filmed going through these doors and through these windows. I'm fearful that they're all going to be shut.
Wow.
We won't let them.
So we can go back to the Fort Worth way.
Wow. You know what? I'm gonna say this, Mr. James. You know what? I think if people do allow things to go back, even though Thomas made some strides in opening some doors and some windows, as you call them, if people allow us to go back, it's gonna be like going back to 1950.
Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna tell you right. I've lived in the city of Fort Worth for 64 some odd years, right?
Mm.
And I feel like I'm still living in the 60s. Mm. Even though we're legally to go places, you know you're not supposed to be there. You know you're not wanted there.
Mm.
And Thomas found those kind of places out. Like, when he went in those buildings, they looked at him like, well, you know, why are you here? You know, who said you could be here? You can't, you know, you can't. Immediately they start making places inaccessible, even though there wasn't an inaccessible sign when you were in the building. They just put them up, verbal, you can't go here, you can't go there, you can't go here.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that when he went to the Trinity Water and they called the cops on him and Manuel.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that when they went to the appraisal district and they got manhandled mm-hmm. out of the back door of the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's alive and it's aware. It's alive and mm-hmm. it's sad. Nobody wants to tackle what Thomas brought forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what?
Go ahead.
Nothing.
No, I don't want to say that people, you know, are bought off or they don't want to lose what prestige they think they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to tell you, if you think you made it, you ain't made it. You know. If you think you made it and everything is fine, I'm going to give you an example. I got a chance to talk with the president of the NAACP yesterday evening at a different event.
Really?
And I brought up the possible judicial misconduct in this trial.
Mm-hmm.
And those people looked up in the sky like I wasn't even speaking. Like they didn't hear a word I said. And then she said, "Well, I can't answer that question. There's a lawyer right there. Could you ask him? He should know your answer." And
wow.
I approached this lawyer. I'm not gonna call him. I approached this lawyer, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, that's above my pay grade. This is higher than you and me." And all
wow.
I want to know was, did you think that this was legal or illegal?
Wow.
So when an organization of that magnitude, you know,
mm-hmm.
starts kicking dust and blowing whistles and looking the other way,
wow,
there's a problem.
Yeah.
I have a question about the case real quick, because I was blown away with your interview with Edward Brown. Now, it did that with a judge who was not sworn under oath. Could they mistrial? Could they go to court and actually mistrial after they? Do you think they did that because of that?
That's a possibility. If he's found guilty, that there would be a possibility that his attorneys would use that.
That's what I mean. So do you? I mean, that's crazy.
But like I,
I'm
like
so
I said,
glad you guys kind of saw that. I mean, that's amazing that was caught before it went to trial.
But it brings back to Thomas. It brings back to Thomas. If something's
mm-hmm.
exposed
mm-hmm.
and nothing is done about it, well, what good did it do to get it exposed?
Mm.
Right.
What good did it do to talk about Panther Island and all the millions of dollars that were wasted if nobody cares? What good
wow.
did it do to go to the county appraisal district and inform people that the taxes are too high and there's some riffraff going on? And nobody does anything. What good does it do to reveal that?
You know what I think?
What?
I'm going to tell you what I think. I'm going to tell you what good I think it did. I think absolutely the work that Thomas did will not be in vain. And I absolutely believe that we are on the cusp of something big happening here in this city. What?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I feel it's about to happen. And I believe that some of the things that he put out into the atmosphere, and he allowed everybody to see it because he would do his lives. You can't deny that stuff. You know, it's kind of like you hear something and pretend you didn't hear it. You know,
right.
So, yeah. So at some point. Uh-huh.
Excuse me. Some people do mm-hmm. pretend they didn't hear it. I didn't see that.
That's
wow.
true, too, yeah.
And they should have seen it because it's right on their face in black and white and sometimes in living color. And they still act like they didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. But I do think I think it's planted some seeds, though, because I've been following
mm-hmm.
that city in crisis, and it's getting out there. And the more people and the more people and the more people that you get,
mm-hmm.
the more it starts to wake people up and they'll see,
yeah.
like, what's happening in their city. So it's going to, you know, it's like a progress seems so slow, but it is moving. And
I think Thomas' untimely death
mm-hmm.
has caused a lot of people to say, who is Thomas Torlakazi? And so what they did, in my opinion, by trying to downplay his importance to the city, only made his legacy bigger. Because you can't deny the difference that he made in this city and the things that he opened other people's eyes to. So in trying to downplay him and be dismissive of the things that he did for the city, they only made him bigger, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, that's evident when he and Manuel exposed the Chandler thing at the appraisal district.
Mm-hmm.
That, that next day, they got 400 Tarrant County citizens lining up.
Yep.
400 lined up the next day. So he was, you know, he was something to, to garner that type of response, and they didn't like that.
You know, I wondered why he did so, you know, most people, when they have some enemies, they'll take out the biggest one first because, you know, most people will say, I can't fight them all at the same time. But Thomas did. And I questioned that this week. I said, why did he take on so many issues, you know, at the same time? But now I realize because he wasn't going to be here very long. So Thomas was on a mission because probably even he didn't know that you know, his life would be cut short. But at the same time, he was on a mission to open our eyes to all these different things that most of us had no knowledge of. So that's
well,
that
the,
yeah.
He told me maybe it was last year that he received death threats.
Oh wow!
And I'm just, I mean, this is quote unquote. It did in fact happen, and he did in fact receive this.
Mm.
But he mustered on. He carried on.
Mm-hmm.
Did he seem afraid? Sometimes you can be afraid, but you can't be afraid.
Okay.
And if you're a person of faith, you know, you don't have time to be afraid.
Right.
Because you know because there's something you were called to do.
Mm. Amen.
Am I afraid? Sometimes I get afraid, and people ask me, well, are you afraid, or do you think? And, yeah, sometimes I do think. You know, my mind crosses that line.
Mm-hmm. That's when I go to prayer, Fred.
Yeah.
I think it's normal to be afraid when you're calling out a sheriff of a city and taking on police brutality. It's a frightening space. But at the same time, I just, whenever I feel that fear, because I've had death threats, I've had people write me and tell me that they know where I live and they're going to kill me. And I just block them and pray, you know, like whatever. I can't stop trying to get justice, and I can't stop. And it is a calling. It's like, you know, right is right, and you know wrong is wrong, and you're raised to know right from wrong. And so that's just your religion too, you know, like it's a moral compass. And so and you want to teach your children that moral compass. And when they see so much wrong being done, you know, my oldest son said, Mom, one day we're going to save up money and we can get the police to care about who hit my brothers and assaulted you. And if your own children are telling you that we got to have money to get police to care about who hurts us, you know, you got to get out the door. And I did have PTSD, but I think that's where I turned to faith and just kind of bigger going on. And there's bigger forces that are good out there and know that we're taking on some bad stuff. But at the same time, we're with the good side. There's a bigger good side. We live in Tarrant County. This is the most populated red county in the country. So we live on the front lines of a social upheaval right now. And historians are saying this is like 1930 and 1860. So we're in a very serious time. But you guys are doing amazing work. And I'm so proud that you guys are take that fear and just face it, because if you didn't do it, then you wouldn't make me feel like I can do it too. I mean, I do look up to my elders and see you guys doing it and then feel like I can do it, you know? So you guys make it better. You're teachers. So you're teaching the people around you to do it. So thank you.
Well, now we're elders, but okay. I get that. But you know, I'm an
elder.
This.
I'm the elder to anyone under 45.
Okay, so we're in the same class.
We're in the same. I'm an elder too. Don't worry.
Yeah,
my kid just yesterday was like, "You got a lot of gray hair now." I'm like, "Yes, I do. Yes, I do."
Exactly. We're in the same class. I think what Thomas did. You know, when I would do the show a lot of times, because y'all listen, I faced harassment from Fort Worth PD since 2011 when I covered Sherelle Thomas' shooting by the Fort Worth Police Department. That said, say what? So I've had it since then, and so to be honest with you, when I saw Thomas and his bravery at going to city council, I immediately sought him out. I sought out Mr. James because of him going down there. And so I started trying to lock arms with people that I saw were showing bravery and speaking truth to power. And so it was such an air sucked out of the room when I heard about Thomas' death. Because I could not believe, like, oh my God. And so there's been some things that have developed since Thomas's death that makes one worry. And I hope Mata calls in tonight, because I understand that Mata is being harassed by the DA now. And someone, and I want Mata to confirm this, that they're telling him he may face 25 to life for being a habitual offender. And so I just find that very strange, you know, for that to come down, you know, the same week that Thomas has died. And there was another young lady that Thomas helped. I won't call her name, but
the mother that was at that city council about her son in prison, that was on they went and videotaped her.
Right. That young lady is scared for her very life right now. And it tears me up, because Thomas and Mata went to IED with her to file a complaint. The video is online. They were very instrumental in helping her get release the body cam from the officer. And right now, you know, she's in fear of her life. She feels that, you know, she is under the threat of possibly being arrested because, in essence, she had a family member who has been having some problems, some mental problems, and she called the police. The person is a minor. And instead of the police taking the minor to seek medical attention, they took him to a location, a building, and they took a written statement from him. And in that statement, he made accusations against her. And now she's being investigated, even though she repeatedly told them that this person was a danger to the family, and asked them to remove this person from the household. So saying all that to say, Thomas helped her. Thomas and Mata helped her. And now she is finding herself, you know, in fear of being arrested, even though she's cried out, you know, to the system for help, you know. And so it's just very ironic that so many people that Thomas helped, they're, you know, in a situation right now where it's like they're somewhat being harassed because of it. And that's very scary. And I say, if that is the case, shame on the city. I mean, absolutely shame on the city, because people don't want to believe that the worst happened, but if you start harassing people after a man dies, it makes people believe that the worst possibly happened. And so that is very concerning. I mean, it's very concerning. And so I just don't believe that the work that Thomas did will be in vain. I think good will override evil at some point. And as my intro music said, change will come. I believe that. I believe that every time I listen to that song, I say a prayer that those words will manifest.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely
do. Amen.
I do.
I pray with you. Now, yeah. I think that part of the hush that you say came over the city is definitely, if you're seeing the people that, you know, it's all over YouTube, it's in the news. I mean, Manuel and Thomas were in Star Telegram. They were in, you know, they're connected to Fort Worth Weekly. They're not, I mean, it's like a Fort Worth story. So a lot of people know who they are. We've got what happened at the appraisal district. And there's like mm-hmm. 400, what did you say there was 400 people up there? So it's like all these people know who these people are. Are all those 400 people supposed to be scared that the police are going to come after them because they were part of people that were connected to Manuel Mata or knew Thomas? I mean, if you know these people, are you harassed? I mean, that's what I think is the hush, is that people are starting to be they're scaring people. You're going to scare people, protesters.
But why?
If you're scaring peaceful protesters and then you're also on the side of insurrectionists, I mean, there's a lot going on that people are just scared.
Yeah.
We watched insurrectionists storm our Capitol and we watched our own governor side with them. I mean, Trump came into Dallas and brought Hungary's Orbán, and that guy is against interracial marriages. We're in a situation where people are just freaking out a little bit, I think. We're in a global pandemic. It's just been a lot for people to process, and I think everyone's just a little bit on edge, and it would be a great time for people to start doing what's right and holding people that are corrupt accountable instead of harassing people that call out corruption.
But you know what I'm going to say tonight is that, first of all, if God be for us, who can be against us? And I also want to say that Dick Gregory, who is somebody I considered a mentor, said something to me one time. I asked him a question off air about what gave him the courage to take on the issues that he took on in the 60s in the height of all the racism that existed in that era. And he said to me, I couldn't even believe his response. He said, if the God I serve cannot protect me, and I won't use the words he used, but if the God I serve cannot protect me from some racist individual, then I'm serving the wrong God. And so whenever I need that type of strength, I remember that conversation. And that's what has gotten me through this week. If the God I serve can't protect me, then I'm serving the wrong God. That simple, you know. And I think we all have to know that good will prevail in the end. I'll share a story with y'all that was so strange. About 3 or 4 days before Thomas died, I kept seeing the shadow. And every time I would, it was low. It was like low, about the size of like a large animal. Let's just say about the size of like a full grown Rottweiler or something. And every time I looked, the shadow would move. And every time I see the shadow, it would get clearer. And the last time I saw the shadow, it looked like a black leopard. And I thought, wow, what is that? And I went online to look up what does it mean if you see a black leopard. And it said things like, you know, it comes to tell you about death and rebirth. But it also talked about that, you know, it's about strength and basically it said a lot of things, y'all. But in essence, the black leopard ain't no punk. Let's just say that. The black leopard ain't no punk. And that in essence it was a protection. It was a protection. And so I don't think that was by coincidence. I'd never seen one in all the years of my life before. And I just think it was maybe God's way of saying, listen, I'm with you, you know, and if I'm with you, you're going to be okay. And so it's kind of like Dr. King, when he did that speech, I'm sure he was scared, but he had done everything he came to do. And so with Thomas, Thomas had done everything he had come here to do. He had fulfilled his mission. You know, now what the rest of us take from Thomas's mission is on us. I really see that. Yeah. You agree with that, Mr. Jane?
Yeah, totally agree with it.
Yeah. He had done it.
Me too.
And so when you see it like that, it's a celebration of life. Because the first couple of days after this, y'all, it was real gloomy for me. I thought, this is just too much. But then the more I began to think about how many things he was taking on and how he had this sense of urgency about getting it done, he was completing his mission. So, you know, the Bible says, death, where is thy sting? So, where is thy sting? So what looked like somebody was taking something from somebody. No. I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to make you cry. I'm going to make myself cry.
Oh,
but
Lord.
I didn't mean to do that.
I know.
It's
so hard.
I wasn't trying to go there.
It's okay.
But
okay.
I'm thinking we can't let evil rule. And we got to realize his mission was accomplished, and he did us all, you know.
He encouraged us to speak our truth.
Yeah.
I do see him as a teacher.
Yeah. And to be courageous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, when I called 911 and I was assaulted, and Deputy Dumit told me he didn't like my attitude, when I asked him how he could take me away and take the side of violence against me in front of my family, he said he didn't care about you people.
Wow.
And when you can't get people to protect you from violence, you know, it's just to you. And I couldn't get anybody to care. And Thomas and Carrie, you also were two of the first people who just let me speak about it and let me confront the fear of speaking in public about it. And I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. It's been baby steps to get here. I was so glad to find some other people, to be honest with you, after all these years, to share my story with you. And so in meeting some of y'all, y'all will never know how that has helped me, because
because
you know what, this city has such a way of trying to muzzle what they consider big mouth, and they either come for your finances, you know, they come for, you know, your freedom, you know, in whatever way they
your children
do to,
they come for your children.
Yeah.
And when they tell you they don't like your attitude and they can hurt you because they don't like your attitude, I could see Thomas had way more of an attitude than I ever did. I didn't even cop an attitude like him. And I was like, oh, my God. Wow. Like, you can have that kind of, okay. Like, it was just so encouraging to see he didn't have to be pleasant. You know, women are also kind of groomed to be pleasant. And so he could be, you know, he could say whatever he felt, and he'd be like, that's my freedom. That's my right, you know, and it's just so nice to be taught your constitutional rights, that you can be obnoxious if you want. Nobody can arrest you because your attitude, you know, like nobody can assault you because of your attitude. You're not doing anything. Nobody can hit you because you say something that they don't like. You know, like you teach children you cannot hit first. So watching anybody get to assault citizens because they don't like their attitude with a badge is terrifying. And we've seen it so many times, and it's authoritarianism. It's a bully. We know what bullies look like. You can dress it up. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing we saw on the playground as kids. Mm-hmm. You got a bigger vocabulary, and you got a badge and a gun, but you're still the bully. And not all cops are bullies. I have great people I know that would never hurt a human, and they mm-hmm. want the police to be good. And I thought that if we stood up for the bad cops, we actually protect the good cops that are getting a bad rep.
Oh,
that
was
in an evangelical fundamentalist church, and I was very sheltered and, like, told, like, Sunday school messages every day, like, this is going to be good. These people are good. These people are going to be so grateful that I called out this bad person. I'm going to protect the good cops. I'm going to show them the bad cops. And then they were like, we don't like your attitude. I was like, oh, God. You know, it's Mm-mm. terrifying. You think you're doing something good, and then they hurt you, and you're shocked, you know? Like, you would think that, I mean, it was just shocking. But one of the one great things I've experienced, because I went to college to study civil rights, and one of the best moments is that we have, like, the largest peaceful protest in human history happening while we're alive right now. And the peaceful protests that are happening right now are the most peaceful than they've ever been. So when you hear someone try to say Black Lives Matter is so dangerous, tell them, no, that's not true. We have the most peaceful protests right now that we've ever had in human history, and they're the largest ones. That shows that how great we are. And also, an amazing thing to me, while we're doing all these peaceful protests and they're trying to make peaceful protesters out to be dangerous, every time I went to the Black Lives Matter marches downtown, everybody was praying. It was ministers, pastors. I've seen mm-hmm. civil rights leaders that were in the 60s crying because it's so many people. There's, like, mm-hmm. my French indigenous family and then all the Irish and then this and that and that. And, like, it's not that you guys are facing it alone. The Freedom Riders came down. There were white people coming down from the north, but now there's people here with you, and you're not alone, you know? So I saw how we're so much more united now, and that mm-hmm. scares the shit out of the white supremacists, okay?
I agree. I think Fort Worth is really they're very big on bragging about we're one of the fastest growing cities in the country. However, the times are not moving in this city as quick as the people are moving here. And I think people will quickly learn that Fort Worth is like stepping back into the past in many ways. It's like if you go 30 miles east, it's totally different in Dallas. But here it's like they really still want to suppress, the people, I mean, in many, many ways. And I think that's the unfortunate part. And a young lady told me this week, y'all, FYI, those T-shirts that Thomas wore, the black ones that said, "We the People," she is willing to make those T-shirts for $15 each. They're all black, 100% cotton, and they say with the same font that Thomas's T-shirt said, "We the People." I think we all, when we go to City Hall, we need to wear those kind of T-shirts, that "We the People" T-shirts, and constantly remind them, it's "We the People." You know, mm-hmm. no matter how, you know, you got here, once you got in those seats, you're still supposed to be a servant of the people. And at some point, at whatever point in which you decide, we are nauseating to you, or we're not, we're not a developer, so we don't come down here with big bucks, or, you know, we're not your friends or your family, then we don't count. I think that's sad. And Mr. James, even with you and how you go down there and you make your point every week, do you feel like they hear you? I mean, do you really feel like you're being heard?
I feel like I'm being heard, but they feel like since the trial is no longer in, the ball is no longer in their court, it's in the legal system, it's in the criminal court system, their hands are off of it. And I say their hands are not off of it because you as a city council need to be making sure that this, you know, never happens again. So what are you doing to ensure this never happens again?
Well, Mr. James, do this. You read the 97-page report that you said Thomas would be jumping up and down about. What did the 97-page report say?
It was a gas question.
in a nutshell, the city's police department gets an F. It noticed that they make policies on paper to say they're doing these things, but they're not actually putting those policies in practice.
Oh, wow.
It's a real eye opener, and it's funny that they didn't mention it at the city council meeting.
Oh, wow.
In fact, the report
came out about...
How did somebody get a copy of the report?
How do you get a copy of the report?
It was the media.
Oh.
Yeah. In fact, because Thomas would have gotten a copy, but it was fresh off the press. I got it from a media source.
Wow.
But like I told them, reading is fundamental. And once you read, you have to comprehend what you read.
Wow.
And I suggested for them that they comprehend what they read and act on it.
I think Thomas said one of the last things he said was that the Fort Worth PD was operating like a gang.
That's in the report.
Wow. Oh, my God.
That 97 pages, it sounds like a lot of pages, but it's informative. And like I told him at the city council meeting, I don't know if you heard me or not, as I read that report, I cringed because I was reading what I already knew.
Right.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Right.
And
so it really didn't tell you anything you didn't already know.
Right.
Oh.
All the way down to separation of the races within the force.
Oh.
They have a graph in that report. And on every subject, I think I sent it to you, every section of that police department, when it comes to a person of color, in some cases they have none in that department or they have one.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
You know.
And how many officers on the force?
Well, I know the number, but I don't know it right off the top of my head. But
is it like 1,700?
Do they do gender on that? Do they talk about how many women are in positions too? Just curious.
I have to go back and look. I think they separated by race in this report.
Mm.
But African Americans.
I find that there's a lot of chauvinism at play, where women are. I see it really, really bad. The violence against women. It's 24% more likely to get shot to death for women in Texas in a domestic dispute than any other state. And if we have police that are showing up taking the side of domestic violence over the women and telling women that they don't like their attitude, I mean, it's pretty scary. We need definitely to also look into the violence against women and how police, if there's police that have domestic violence on their records where they have also assaulted women, and if they would show up on scene, I think that that's very important. There needs to be way more psych evaluations, way more. It was shocking to meet such a cold, cruel person when you call for help. You know, when you're crying, you've been assaulted, and someone's like shouting at you to get over by a car and then telling you they don't like you. I mean, it's pretty scary. So, and then you go to the police and you tell them and they don't do anything about it, and then they, you know, it's just, it's frightening. And so, and I would like to know, I'm going to go through that report, and Carrie, I think that'd be a really great show idea for you to like have people on that know that report, and it sounds like Ms. James knows it pretty well.
Wow.
I would love to hear a show like that.
I think when that report came out, it was on the cuff of Thomas's situation.
It and was. It just, I haven't even had a chance to sit down and even look at it. I'm just grieving still.
Because, you know, y'all, and I'm not even kidding, it has been hard to do the simplest task this week because I got ready to do the show and forgot how to do my own introduction. I kid you not. It was just,
I started crying.
I was blank. I mean, I was sitting there writing there. I go, well, you know, because it's just, it's like when you know that someone was that impactful, and then you know that their presence is no longer going to be here on earth, and then you know, looking around the room, that there's nobody that's able to fill their shoes. And I shouldn't say that there may be someone able, but they'll never do it in his style. They'll never have his charisma. They'll never, you know, be a graduate of the Toastmasters. You know, they'll never be Thomas. But I'm sure there's other people, but they won't even, I don't know of anybody else who has the courage to do what Thomas was doing. Now, Mata, don't get me wrong, Mata is doing his thing, but Mata does it in a different style. Mata does Mata. Thomas did Thomas. And so I think the way in which Thomas was doing Thomas, he had such a sense of urgency. And he was just, he was all over the place. You know, like we said, TRWD, TAD, you know, Panther Island, you know, the City Hall, you know, just, Commissioner's Court. He was all in the county building. He was everywhere. But it was to awaken us to what we obviously had our eyes closed to. And when I think about, you know, things ain't going to be the same in this city, but I do believe that the work that he started, it is going to accomplish his mission at some point. I really do. I don't believe that they're going to be able to pretend, you know, that they can bring in a mariachi band and a dancer and some dogs, and people are going to forget Thomas Rolandazi. That just ain't going to happen. And I say shame on City Hall. There was a shame.
I wrote a poem for him. I always write a lot of poetry,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't leave him out of the mix. And I'm going to say it real quick.
Okay.
I've stood where he stood many times, addressing the city council meeting of the minds. His approach was smooth and to the point, accountability and to the joint. Mm-hmm. If you could walk a mile in his shoes, you'd see he brought factual information, not just clues. There's a void in the city of Fort Worth that may never be filled. I'm so glad to have known a man that kept it real. Rest in peace, Thomas.
Wow.
Beautiful. That's gorgeous.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful.
That's great.
I mean, because you know what? That really,
you know,
is him in a nutshell. That's him in a nutshell.
Yeah.
That is.
See, that's what he is to so many people. And then the people that find him nauseating or find that they just didn't get it. I don't think they see it. They didn't get it because they see him as like, I was shocked because when I saw gadfly, I was like, what? A horsefly? Like something you got that bothers your horse? You know, like this annoying pest?
Yeah.
And I even sent it to my aunt who runs a nonprofit for urban education. And she even commented on how many times they mentioned gadfly and how that was curious. Mm. I mean, that was her first instinct was to say, what's this about? You know, she's a journalist. So it's kind of like if a journalist instantly says, why is gadfly being used so much? It's not a nice thing. You know, it's not very nice. It's not nice to say this annoying person to the city when he inspires poetry. Okay.
Wow.
So you're just not getting it.
And that was the Star Telegram, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I told my aunt that Star Telegram's kind of leans alt-right, and Thomas was definitely a left, kind of leaning left person. So there would be probably a slant, just I would think. If you're, you know, you'd probably see him like people see him if they're standing on the right, right? I mean,
No.
I think
it's bigger than that, Becky. I think that there has been a narrative that they're trying to draw that, you know, Thomas was some nobody, you know, who basically was, you know, somebody that you can just dismiss, you know, okay.
Oh,
gone.
An annoying peasant. He was an annoying peasant. I get it. Okay.
Right. And so I think to whoever came up with that idea, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, it didn't work. And then third of all, he's going to be bigger in death than he ever was in life. And so I would say Operation Backfire, because that didn't work. He absolutely was a giant. Yeah, he was a giant. And so it's funny that Thomas stood in front of City Hall that time and he said, we the people, or he said, we are David. And you, he pointed at city council, he said, you all are Goliath. And that's when the mayor said, you're done. And I thought to myself, why does that make him done? Because he told the truth. He said, we're David and you're Goliath. And she said, you're done.
Wasn't Thomas a school teacher? Am I remembering this right or no?
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe I'm mixing it up. But I did love that a school teacher came in who taught journalism in one of the – and she stood up for him and said how, like, he deserves to be heard and treated with more respect because he's her neighbor, and she was just offended because that's a school teacher, a journalist school teacher. If you're offending school teachers who teach journalism, I mean, get a clue.
Wow.
Right? I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand how people don't see it, that there's so many people that he would help behind closed doors and give, you know, encouragement to, listen to and believe what happened to them instead of doubting them or being flippant or seeing them as trash. You know, a lot of times people treat people like they're not worthy of getting justice because they don't have money. And so Thomas was somebody who saw everybody, if you were wealthy or poor, as an equal who deserves an equal right to your constitutional rights. So,
and
it just,
I think you said it best, Becky. Material things don't measure a man. Not at all. No. And so, dear city of Fort Worth, if you think we're going to measure somebody by material things, you are mistaken. We're smarter than that. And we have enough sense to know that that has nothing to do with the measure of a man. And so whatever, you know, ugly narrative you all are trying to put out there, the people will see through you all. And that will cost some people their reelection. So FYI, if I were y'all, I would be a little nicer with your words, you know, because people are
your
paying
character,
attention.
I mean, think about if that was your son and you read that they were remembering him as an annoying person in the newspaper. I mean, I would be furious if somebody was writing about my kid like that. I mean, just got to think about the family, his friends. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't understand it. I don't think they go around and talk to
it's
the people that knew him.
No, they didn't. It was a pettiness. It was a real pettiness. As a matter of fact, I think the only person that they spoke with was maybe like Bob Willoughby. The other person I think they talked to was Judge Whitley at Commissioner's Court and the mayor, people who he challenged all the time. So, like, really, y'all? So Judge Whitley says, oh, he was surprised at his death. And I think they said the mayor made a comment through her assistant. So, like, you know, I think what I see is y'all are not using, you know, a degree of professionalism in the way it was handled Tuesday night. I think I saw just a total disregard for a man's life who meant so much to the people who watched him go down at City Hall. Because, again, it's not all about the people who sit on the dais. It's about the people who watch the people who sit on the dais. And so for them not to even mention Thomas was a sad commentary for the people that we call leaders downtown, or call our leaders downtown. And I don't know. I just thought, I watched the whole thing thinking, of course, they're going to mention Thomas. And then at the end, the mayor mentioned some other man that died. And I thought, wow, petty. that's really what came to mind, petty. And people are paying attention. You know, I heard three people come down there and mention Thomas' name. As a matter of fact, George mentioned Thomas' name. And he didn't call the same. He alluded to, you know, we lost a great Wednesday night. That's the way he put it. Then Lon spoke of him, and then Bishop Kirkland spoke of him but could not remember his name. That said, Okay, everybody else remembers him, but y'all don't? Okay. Mr. James, did you find that shocking?
You know, after 3 years of every day something shocking. I don't know. I'm not even looking for a December 5th trial. It's just everything is shocking.
Yeah.
They just have to know. Yeah.
That's the perfect way to put it. It is like everything, you're like, oh, well, there's another shocking thing that just happened.
Yeah.
Put it on your tab, right? Like, it's just making a list. God.
I just think if they
I'm glad you're there, Mr. James. I think I'm so proud of you for going up there for 3 years. I just find it very honorable of you, sir.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I'm seeing, you know, even after this is over, I'm, you know, when I spoke of Thomas Siege, you know, I may not make all these 10 places he was going, I may not be able to get to all of them, but a few of them I can chime in on.
Well, that's good. I think that there's a lot of people to pick up his light. So maybe there's just so many people that are going to take different parts of what he picked up.
Right.
You know, I think that we're all here to help. And you're doing a great job.
Absolutely.
I support you.
And you know, I was looking forward to hearing Thomas comment or do commentary on the Tatiana Jefferson trial. I really was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was going to bring definitely a fresh perspective of what was going on at the trial, and I think that will be greatly missed. I don't think anybody would have covered it like he did.
I'm just amazed that at a city of over a million people, the concern.
I went down when Tatiana Jefferson first was killed. I remember going down Fort Worth because I just felt compelled because it's a historical moment. I wanted to be there and I wanted to show my support. And I remember I was just appalled because I got there. Lee Merritt was there. I held Tatiana Jefferson's sister's phone. I remember being real upset because it was dying and I didn't want it to die on her while she was talking. And I just was appalled that there was no politicians. There was no representation for the police. It was treated like it was just not happening. And to be standing there, Lee Merritt was like speaking to United Nations. This is a person that's a civil rights leader to so many people. And he's down there, downtown Fort Worth, and they couldn't even send out a representation for the police. They couldn't send out anybody who's a politician. They didn't have anybody there, and it was just shocking to me, shocking, like blew my mind about the lack of anybody there. So seeing Mr. James standing up there for her, I find it so important, and thank you for doing that because her story is just as important as George Floyd. Her story is just as important, and that there's such a difference that we're not – there's not more people like demanding it is so frustrating, but I understand that frustration because it's so hard for me to get anybody to care that my children were wrongfully taken. Like I have CPS admitting to my therapist that it was wrong, and it doesn't even matter that you have evidence. Does it matter that you're telling the truth? It's just an offense that's been done to you, and nobody will have accountability for it, you know? And it's like so frustrating, but you guys are such great people of faith, and you choose this peaceful protest, and you choose to just follow such a good example, and you set such a good example. And I'm just really proud of you guys because you make writing this history a lot easier because it's an extension of the case of nonviolent protest of just it's a beautiful thing to see, and I'm just really proud to know you both, and I just want you guys to know that.
With Thomas, I heard the word transparency 3 years ago. Thomas was the epitome of what transparency should be.
Wow.
He's been more transparent with the operational aspect of the city than the people that's supposed to be running it.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be part of my citizen's presentation.
And, wow, I look forward to it.
If you want to know the definition of transparency, Thomas was it.
Yep.
I was blown away when he showed us how he could just request text messages and find out what public service in a group were all text messaging, just bullying a human. They didn't take him serious. They all sat around making, like, derogatory comments about him. It was just shocking that we don't have people that are more mature that handle so much power.
Right. Well.
And I was amazed that he could – I didn't even know that you could do that. I didn't know you could go ask for text messages to be released. Did you guys know you could do that?
If they're used in the course of that city or county job, if you use cell phone to conduct county business, then your phone is free game.
Wow. Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that, too.
Yeah,
It was just shocking because a lot of people, I think, feel like he hurt people by standing up and being upset about corruption. And they feel like he was maybe, I think, too confrontational or something. But I think he was just very passionate and he was kind. And if once somebody disrespected him, then he would disrespect them back. And it seemed like a lot of people didn't like that he disrespected people back. Like, he would have a lot of passive-aggressive people, and they would be passive-aggressive rude to him, and he would call them out on being rude. And then they would act offended that he was being confrontational, but they were being confrontational by being passive-aggressive. So it's just like a weird – you just saw so much of that dynamic being recorded on film that you could see the passive-aggressiveness. You could see how people were kind of treating him like he was less than. And then he would get upset, and then he would start to, return this kind of bad attitude back, which – you should be able to, if someone's rude to you, you should be able to stand up for yourself. And then people seem to act like he was more controversial because the city worker who was being patronizing or passive aggressive, because he would just bluntly call out their passive aggressiveness. He wouldn't pretend he was being nice or put on this kind of like snarky, do you know what I mean?
I do.
Did you see that?
I did.
Yeah, so I don't understand who couldn't see that. So, but there are people out there that seem to just not see that the people being passive aggressive were the initial person being rude, and then it seemed like they'd try to pretend he was rude for no reason or something. I noticed that a lot.
Go ahead, Mr.
There's a problem. There's a problem when you have the authorities enforcing laws that they don't even know what the law is.
Mm.
No, I'm gonna arrest you. I'm gonna fight you, and you're citing me on a law that's, non-existent. But rather than learn the law, you see it on numerous videos. They didn't know the cops didn't know the law, but they wrote tickets and citations and. Kicked you out of buildings even though you weren't supposed to be kicked out of the building. And nobody came back and said, oh, I'm sorry, There was none of that when Manuel got kicked out of the commissioner's court.
Mm-hmm.
When he legally could be there, they, took him out, Nobody came back and acknowledged the fact that the law does allow him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Seems that they're lacking the maturity to admit mistakes. The maturity to admit they've been wrong ever. It seems like just the authoritarian, you see that in school teachers, some school teachers have authoritarian issues and some, most don't, but it seems kind of that kind of personality trait where people make mistakes and they just have to make the person wrong instead of just saying, hey, I messed up. I should have not kicked you out. It's legal for you to be here. Please forgive me. Why can't they model being human instead of being like an authoritarian, because everybody can make mistakes. And then I do think when people are human and admit that things make mistakes, that people can forgive and you can mend bridge, you know, you can mend and offer peace, you know, like there's a community and communication. And I just think we're lacking leaders that can communicate like that.
But you have to remember there are elements that don't want to change. There are elements that wanted the status quo to stay the same.
Right.
And there's going to be resistance. And the question
and you know,
is, will go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish that.
You know, I was going to say, are the people going to, you know, we the people, are we going to stand in Thomas's shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we going to sit down?
I think,
the back of the bus?
Right. I think it's a unstated feeling down there that we want things to go back like they were before a Thomas Torlakazi or a Bob Willoughby would be coming down here and challenging, you know, what we say. And it was almost like it was a dumbed down listener before they came and start speaking. And so now it's like, of course, they consider that a gadfly, because they're annoying to them. Because when you say Elizabeth Beck that you think you're smarter than we are, as though no one could be smarter than the people that are sitting on council, which is a ridiculous thing to say, by the way. But she said that to Thomas, or at Thomas. You know, you think you're smarter than we are. That's a ridiculous thing to say. But I think he, you know, challenged people to think. He brought new information every week. He was very informed about the topics that he spoke on. And every chance that they could get to try to make him look like he was wrong about something, they did. I didn't hear that.
Somebody told him that he thought he was smarter than them.
You remember that, Mr. James? Didn't she say that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
And then the fellow council person agreeing with him.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, I think it was
that's
their council.
Very that's defamation of character.
I don't remember who co-signed it.
Councilwoman Bivens.
Oh, wow.
So Thomas didn't say to them, you guys think you're smarter than us?
No, they said that to him.
You see what I mean?
They said that to him.
They said that
and that's
him.
The thing you have to learn. You have to learn that when somebody says something mean to you, you wouldn't say that thing. So, I mean, I think Thomas treated everybody like they were equally intelligent people. He seemed like a good teacher. Like, he didn't ever strike me as thinking he was smarter than me.
I think the problem they had with Thomas is that Thomas was an influencer. I really think that was the problem. That Thomas wasn't just down there speaking. Thomas was an influencer and provoked people to. And so I think that was the problem. That his presence, his mere presence, when people saw him at council, they knew Thomas was going to bring it. They knew Thomas had read the agenda items on there, and he was going to either basically tell you something that you didn't know about it or inform you about what the item was about. Because remember the night that he went down there and he explained every single agenda item after they stopped reading the description of the agenda item?
Mm.
Thomas was informative that night, but he was also making a point to let people know that, y'all, this needs to be in place again, that this is very significant, that they're taking this off of the docket, that they're not allowing you to understand what the vote is actually about. All they're giving you is the vote, or they're giving you the agenda item number. And then if there's not a person to speak for or against it, then they were immediately going into the vote, which was leaving the audience not to understand if, you know, exactly what they were voting for. If they were skipping around, which they tend to do sometimes, and Mr. James, you've been down there more than me, don't sometimes they skip around on the order of those things as they have them listed?
they do, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they don't do them.
Oh, wow.
Even if they're listed, they skip over them or carry them over to the next, you know, to the next meeting.
Can you clarify so I make sure I'm hearing this correctly? Are you saying that they will vote on things without telling anybody what the vote is even about?
No, what they will do is postpone the vote for another meeting.
She's asking you about the description of the agenda item. They don't do that anymore, remember?
Right.
Yeah, they don't tell you what the vote is about.
Yeah, you have
they
to read
tell
it for yourself.
They'll say something like clemency, I don't know what they call that word. I think they say clemency item MC-22605. And then they'll immediately go into the vote if there's no one speaking against it or for it. So therefore, if you are not following closely with the, I'm sorry, what, Mr. James?
You're right. If you don't know what that is beforehand, then you're just not going to be able to comment.
And they say they have it up on the screen. They say they have it up on the screen, but the problem is if they're skipping around, if you're going in the order that they have it on the program and you're thinking, okay, then, you know, 0607 just came up, so 0608 is next. And if you're expecting that and they move the order around, you don't have a clue as to what the next vote is about.
Right.
And we're talking about billions of dollars being moved around downtown every week, and sometimes you don't have a clue as to what they're talking about because they're not following the program.
So there is a lack of transparency.
Yeah.
The money moving around the city, Thomas brought to light the amount of money moving around the city and the amount of contracts going to, you know, family members. I mean, he did open some windows and some curtains.
Wow.
And I'm just hoping that we the people put our foot in that door so it won't be closed.
Wow.
Because they're ready to shut that door. They're ready to have their comfort back. Because they were comfortable doing all the wrongdoing they were doing. They want their comfort back.
Wow. And that's the sad thing. Because Thomas put so much on the line to do what he did. The sacrifice that he made, people may never know the sacrifice Thomas made to do what he did.
I'll give you an example. He builds ponds. And he was 300 miles away from Fort Worth, Texas. But there was an item on the agenda that he needed to address. He drove 300 miles just to talk 3 minutes.
Oh, wow.
How many of us would do that?
None of us probably. Wow.
How many of us would drive 300 miles, you know, to talk for 3 minutes?
Wow.
Well, actually, it's 600 because you got to go back to work. So 600 miles round trip to speak for 3 minutes.
Wow.
Wow.
People don't understand the sacrifice that he made. Thomas was not paid for any of those. He was not paid for any of those speeches that he made, not one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he made them.
Yeah.
And that part, you know, people will never know the sacrifice.
He had nothing to gain.
No, that's a lot of just work that he put into reading everything, going through everything. I mean, I'm just so amazed. That's so many different investigations he had to do. He's basically just an investigative citizen journalist.
Wow. On many levels, you know, he was in his own lane. I mean, seriously, you're talking about a man that was in his own lane. He was in his own lane. I mean, and there was no competition to what he was doing. I mean, it really wasn't.
Nope.
That part, they can never take that from him. They absolutely can't. And so
maybe there'll be a lot more citizen journalists who take on, you know, just take on little parts of investigating what's going on and trying to open up doors. Maybe this will inspire people to understand that the freedom of press is for every citizen. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to go to school to be a journalist. You don't have to get a degree in journalism. You know, I'm a historian, and I would go into places and ask questions and just do a lot of investigative questioning because I want to understand the story of the history that's happening right now. And you don't have to even get a degree in history to do that. You can just go, and you're a citizen, and you can ask any questions, and you can write about it. You know, in high school courses, you're taught in journalism to go down, to be a part of it, like PTA, like go into the meeting, report back to your neighbors, your friends, what you heard. That's being a good citizen. So if you want to go out, listen to what's happening, write about it, tell your friends, your family, like, you are the change wherever you are, and you will make a difference in your own group, in your own neighborhood. You know, it's okay. You don't have to wait to, you know, colleges have gone up in the last 40 years. It's so much more money to get a degree now than it ever was 40 years ago. So don't think you have to have a college degree to go out there and be, you know, a investigative reporter or to go out there and to get a story or to write a history lesson. You know, you are a great asset. You are a person on the floor looking around. You can write about it, talk about it, share your experience, get it out there. And then the more people that do that, we'll have a better understanding of what we are living in and what's going on. So I would advocate for anybody. Yeah, Thomas did that.
Every time he went to one of those buildings, he would say that the people have a right. As what did he call it? Did he call it free press or I
free,
forgot
yeah.
the term. He used to say freedom of the press.
The public buildings belong to us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Taxpayers.
But
no, I mean, any citizen has the freedom of press. You have the freedom to go in, write a story, listen to it, record it, you know, understand things. You don't have to have somebody tell you you can do it. You can do it. And I think that a lot – I heard – this one lady asked me one time, like, what made you think you could go to the airport and interview – you know, I stood in line with a bunch of – journalists to get interviews whenever there was the ban on Muslims because, you know, it's a historical moment. It's against the Constitution to ban people for their religion. I wanted to go down and get my first impression so I could understand it to teach children later about this moment. You know, my history teachers and my history professors all were part of marching with MLK and doing things, going out, experiencing it so that they could teach me about it. So I want to teach when I am teaching children, I want to teach them, okay, so I went there, I saw this, you know, I want to be a part of the history that's happening. So I was asked one time by this woman who said, how do you think you can do that? How do you think you can go to the airport and take pictures and interview people and just get in line with journalists and just ask questions? I was shocked that anybody would ask me why I think I could do it, but I grew up with an aunt who was a journalist, a freelance journalist, and a photographer. So I would go around with her and just see her do it, you know? So I just never thought that – I never questioned to do it because I just was kind of mentored that way. But it's shocking how many people don't know that you can just do that, that you could just go and do that. And I think the more people know that they can do that, the more we are free – and the more there's freedom of press, the more people are understanding what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I would advocate for everybody to get a pen and paper and take some pictures and talk about what they're experiencing so that historians in the future know what we're going through right now.
Thomas and Mata did that. I mean, they took on TRWD. They took on Tarrant Appraisal District. They took on City Hall. They took on the Commissioner's Court. They absolutely did that. So, you know, I challenge everybody, you know, don't let us go back in time for a door that's already been opened. I think we absolutely should do our best to keep that door open. Y'all, you know, rarely do I pray on this show. As a matter of fact, the last time I prayed on this show, I prayed that we see movement with the Gregory Corley story. And the next week, Gregory Corley got out of jail after a long stretch of people trying to get him out. But that next week, he got out. So because of what we've been feeling this week in terms of, you know, people feeling like they got a whisper, you know, when they talk about Thomas now, it's almost like, you know, people are kind of gripped with fear, and I'm not sure what each person's fear is, and I won't even try to address that. But tonight, I'm going to ask that God put his legions of angels around all of us to cover us, those that speak truth to power. I'm going to ask that God put his hedge of protection around us, that he be a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our pathway, that he order our steps in his word, that we be focused and have a keen discernment of our surroundings and the people that we come in contact with. We're going to ask God to basically be an enemy to our enemies and an adversary to our adversary. And when I say that, I'm not saying that for Carrie. That's in his word already. We're going to ask him to bring down every mountain and raise up every valley in this situation. All of these mountains in Fort Worth that we see and all these valleys that we walk through, we're going to ask God to deal with them. We're going to ask him to deal with those Goliaths that Thomas talked about that night when he said, we the people are David and you all are Goliath. We're going to ask God that he make that level playing field, that as they sit, you know, as an analogy, they sit up on the dais and they look down on the people as they speak, that God raised that thing up. And I don't mean basically the physical point, but on a mental level, that they understand that we the people are eye to eye, and we the people put you all in those seats, and it's you all that are supposed to be serving the people. We're going to ask God that as we walk through the shadows of the valley, as we walk through the shadow of death, that we will fear no evil. Because if we pay attention, it's just a shadow. We're going to ask him to raise up Thomases from the north, the south, the east, and the west. May his life not be in vain. That the work that he started, that some others will walk, not just one, but others, so that one man won't have to carry this burden alone. That Thomases will come from the north, the south, the east, and the west and rise up and speak the truth that Thomas spoke so often at city council and in this city. And basically, we're going to ask that all of us be able to know that we have the strength within us to speak truth to power. That's the way it's supposed to be. People should not fear going before your city council and fear going before your county commissioner and going before your Tarrant appraisal district. It should not be a fear to do that. And we're going to ask God to deal with that. So what the Bible says is where any two or three touch and agree, it shall be done. So I ask that every person that's listening tonight come into agreement with this prayer, because prayer does still change things. And so for all those that love Thomas, Toral, and Cosby, we're going to ask that God, whatever happened, that God reveal it. And we're not saying anything did, but whatever did, we just want to know. We just want to know. And so tonight we'll close with, to the family of Thomas Toral and Cosby, to those friends of Toral and Cosby, basically, you know, y'all, we're all grieving. You know, this just came out of nowhere. But we know that God is still in control. And so as I sign off tonight, Thomas's funeral is tomorrow. His obituary is on his Facebook page. For all this, those that want to be in attendance, I believe it's going to be at 11 a.m. tomorrow at a park that's in Benbrook. I don't have the information in front of me. Mr. James, do you have that information in front of you? But it's going to be in a...
Hold on,
it's going to be... let me go there, y'all, because I don't want anybody to miss it that can be in attendance. But I believe Thomas was cremated, but there will be a memorial service for Thomas, and I'm reading the obituary to be that it's going to be at the Dutch Branch Park Pavilion 3 in Bembrook. So that's Saturday, September 17th, that's tomorrow, at 11 a.m. So be there. So y'all, until next week, good night.
Good night.